Hadley, Hadley, Hadley. Well, my mama got home early one day from work, and she came running in the backyard where I was. And she said, "Boy, what you doing making all that racket?" I said, "Mama, I'm just trying to yodel like all those country singers." She said, "Boy, whenever I pulled up, I thought you were a dying dog. And if I had have had a gun, I would have shot you myself." I looked at my mama and I said,
All right, good morning. This is Brother A-Dub down here, 90.1 FM on your listening dial. You have entered upon higher ground. The views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air, Inc., station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. That is called a disclaimer, and I do that to make sure that if I say something that is not right or inappropriate, that you will charge it to me and call me and tell me about it, and not the folks down here at WEFT. listen, we always need capacity. We need more people to get involved in a community radio station. You are welcome here. Come and join us down here at WEFT as an air shifter, as a volunteer, whatever it may be. Bring your expertise to the table to help us maintain a community-based radio station so that you can always hear the voice of the people. So look, I'm trying to get my stuff together down here. My computer is acting up. I'm working on about 3 hours of sleep. So y'all going to help your brother out this morning. I'm going to play for you a message delivered by a very powerful individual in the world of theology and Black liberation. He is basically the father of Black liberation theology. He goes by the name of Dr. James Cone. So I will be playing a an excerpt of a talk and a speech that he delivered at his where he works at the seminary, Union Seminary. And those of you who have never heard of Black liberation theology, you are definitely you're going to be blessed, I believe, with a message of understanding of kind of about what it is, but the lens through which he saw it and how he developed it. So I want you to tune in, listen to a bit of this. And then at the top of the hour at 9 o'clock, my guest is Mr. Bruce Brown, who is a minister. And we will discuss the connection between Black liberation theology and the new film, The Birth of a Nation, and Nat Turner's role. Of course, the movie's about Nat Turner, but Nat Turner's perspective on theology and on Christianity. So it's going to be an enlightening discussion. You will be taken to higher ground for sure. So y'all tune in and listen. I want to let you know that the individual that you're about to hear has a very, high-pitched, but he has a high-pitched voice. And so adjust your radios and stuff as need be. And I'm trying to get him pulled up.
The thousands of churches in America, or my church across the street.
Let me get this together. This is community radio, y'all. And I am flying solo down here. I'm sure Sister Carol will be calling in or something at some point. But I'm trying to work it out here by myself. So again, if you want to call in at the top of the hour, 217-359-5483, 217-359-6545. And you can also always go online at www.weft.org. Click on Listen Live and you can participate that way as well. We need to grow this, make sure people are getting the message. So you all stick with me. I'm about to press play now. Thought I was. All right, here we go.
Theology. He got here in 1969. Before that, he attended Shorter College and holds a BA from Philander Smith College. He got his MDiv from Garrett and his MA and PhD from Northwestern. He has a long list, 13 honorary doctorates, and has won numerous awards. Among them are the American Black Achievement Award in Religion, given by Ebony Magazine. And I could begin to list these awards, but then we wouldn't have as much time to hear from Dr. Cone. He's an ordained minister in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. He's the author of 12 books and over 150 articles. And he has lectured around the world, literally, as I travel as president of Union around the world and visit places as far-flung as Brazil and South Africa and India, China, Korea. When people find out I'm from Union, the first name off their lips is, "Ah, we remember when Dr. Cone was here. I teach his books." A true international scholar. He's best known in these places around the world for his groundbreaking works, Black Theology and Black Power, 1969, and the standard text in many systematic theology classes, A Black Theology of Liberation. He is author of God of the Oppressed, Martin and Malcolm in America, A Dream or a Nightmare. His research area is in Christian theology with special attention to black liberation theology and liberation theologies. And here the global comes back in again in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. His latest book, and if you haven't read it, I urge you to, is a deeply moving and compelling, indeed searing and yet opening social critique entitled The Cross and the Lynching Tree. And in 2012, it received the Nautilus Silver Award in Religion, Spirituality, and Western Tradition. It was an this never happens to a theology book. It was an Amazon.com number one bestseller. That never happens. Never. And Huffington Post named it one of the top religion books of 2011. All of these statistics and all of these awards and honors and accomplishments don't capture the fullness of this man. To fully capture that, we would need to have the hundreds of students that he has taught and formed over these 47 years here with their lives and their ministry and their prophetic theology bearing witness to what this man has done at Union, in New York City, around the United States, and around the world. Dr. Cohn, thank you.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you. Is this, can you hear me? The volume goes up as I go along. I want to thank President Serene Jones for that wonderful introduction. And it's so wonderful to see one of my presidents also here, Dr. Donald Shriver and his wife Peggy. I am here, and so wonderful to see all of my former students and all the people I know out there. I want to thank you for your presence today. I'm here today because Vice President Fred Davey asked me to conduct a seminar, a lecture on black liberation theology, primarily for Harlem, New York ministerial community. And I said yes. Black liberation theology is my life ministry. It is not an easy subject for me to teach or to talk about, even though I love teaching and love talking about it, especially at Union Seminary. I wouldn't have stayed so long. So hold on to your seats. Brace yourselves. A version of this lecture you will hear today has been presented at other places, especially in my theology class, Kant and Hegel, but rather the God of the Exodus, the prophets, and of Jesus. If God is in the world where people are abused and exploited, what then is God doing? This was my question as I wrestled with the fire that was burning inside me. Christians are called by God to plunge themselves into the world on behalf of those who are voiceless and hurt. The great Russian writer Dostoevsky said, quote, "There is only one thing I dread, not to be worthy of my suffering," unquote. As I reflected on that saying in relation to black suffering, I said, there is only one thing I dread, not to be worthy of the life that the suffering of my black ancestors have made possible for me. I wanted to be a faithful witness to the redemptive meaning of their nearly 400 years of suffering. I am here at Union Seminary today because my ancestors suffered and died for me and for many others like me. Union Seminary founded in 1836, but not for the freedom of black people. Black freedom was not a part of its educational ministry. Cain killed his brother Abel, but Abel's blood spoke. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? He said, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, what have you done? But not for the freedom of black people. Black freedom was not a part of its educational ministry. Cain killed his brother Abel, but Abel's blood spoke. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? He said, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. Now, Cain can be viewed as a metaphor for white people and Abel for black people. God is asking white Americans, especially Christians, where are your black brothers and sisters? And white surprised respond, we don't know. Are we their keepers? And the Lord says, what have you done to them for 4 centuries? The blood of black people is crying out to God and to whites from the ground in the United States of America. The blood of Sandra Bland in Texas and Tamir Rice in Ohio. The blood of the Emmanuel Nine in Charleston and of Eric Garner on Staten Island. The blood of nearly 5,000 lynched blacks. The blood of Ned Turner, Denmark Vesey, and Gabriel Prosser. And the many thousand gone, millions gone on the auction block and under the lash and during the mill passage. Black blood is crying out to God from the ground all over this land. Is anybody listening to the cries of black blood? That strange fruit that Billie Holiday sang about. blood on the leaves and blood at the root. The heart of the Christian faith is the cross of Jesus, the one who shed his blood as a crucified victim in Jerusalem. No one can understand the Jesus of Calvary and the saving power of his blood without seeing him through the experiences of crucified people today. No people can understand the transforming power of Jesus except through the complete solidarity with the poor and the wretched in your midst. When that biblical truth became clear to me, my theological transformation from a Negro theologian to a black theologian began to develop and was soon complete. The blood of blacks in America's cities, Watts, Detroit, and Newark, was crying out to God and to white America, crying out for their humanity to be recognized. We declare our right to be a human being, Malcolm X said, to be respected as a human being on this earth, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary. In the midst of burning cities, I knew what I had to say, but I did not know whether I had the talent or the courage to say it effectively with the word power that would get the attention of the black community and the white theological world. But I had to try, because I heard the cry of black blood, and like the prophet Jeremiah, within me there was something like a burning fire shut up in my bones. I was weary of holding it in, and I could not. I became obsessed with the cries of black blood and the angry, and became angry, really enraged about the silence of white theologians in their churches. They studied Kant and Hegel, Heidegger, and a host of other Europeans who regarded blacks as inferior and unimportant for philosophical and theological reflection, and thereby rendered black blood insignificant. That was why I began writing about a black theology of liberation with a focus on a critique of white theology and its churches, and the need to do theology with a black signature on it. I wanted to challenge white America and its churches, its theologies. I wanted to challenge them to listen to the cries of black blood. White theology has blood on its hands. The blood of black men, women, and children. Look at your hands. dripping with the blood of your black brothers and sisters, I shouted at him. Look at your bloody hands. I wanted also to inspire blacks to create a new theology out of black blood, crying out to God in the world. We must make a theological starting point, I thought, the shed blood of black people in U.S. history and in the streets of America. And I was mad. My Damascus Road experience, my decisive break with European and American white theologians, happened in the summer of 1967 during the Detroit riot, in which 43 people were shot dead in the streets. I was teaching at Adrian College in Adrian, Michigan, about 70 miles from Detroit. And I heard the voices of black blood crying out to God and to humanity. And all of the anger I had suppressed about white supremacy in Arkansas, at Garrett, and Northwestern, and now at Adrian College, all that suppressed anger burst forth out of me like an erupting volcano that had been dormant for many years. I felt like a transcendent presence had seized my whole being, which commanded me to write or be consumed by the rage that was in me. And like a wounded boxer, I came out swinging at white theology and its churches, and I was determined to speak and write the truth that I felt burning inside me. Now Jesus says, in the Gospel of Thomas, one of those books that didn't get in the canon, Jesus says, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. The birth of black liberation theology was nothing but James Cone bringing forth the black truth that was burning inside him. I wanted to be saved from white supremacy and not be destroyed by it. It was so liberating when I began to write, and people began to listen and read what I was saying. To write a book that people actually read and talk about in churches, seminaries, and the community was an amazing achievement for a young black in his late 20s who once chopped and picked cotton for $2 a day and 2 cents a pound in the agriculture fields of Arkansas. Black theology and black power was the first word about the gospel that I brought forth out of me. It was a word which said that black power is not alien to the gospel, but rather it is the gospel of Jesus in 20th century America. The color of the book is red. This is what it looked like. It's red to symbolize the shed blood. Black people fighting for their humanity. Many people called it the Little Red Book. It momentarily shook up white theologians and their churches. Since I didn't need the approval of my professors anymore, I said what I thought. And not what they wanted me to say. And some of them wouldn't speak to me anymore. Well, I didn't have to be the kind of theologian they wanted me to be. I was free. And I felt that freedom while I was writing Black Theology and Black Power in June of 1968 in my brother's church, Union AME in Little Rock, Arkansas, in the wake of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. King's assassination 2 months earlier deepened my rage as I wrote from 7 a.m. to midnight daily, except on Sundays, for 5 weeks. As I wrote, I listened to the spirituals and the blues to remind me for whom I was writing. I felt as if I was under some black spell, wrestling with my vocation as a minister and as a theologian, trying to make myself accountable to a transcendent presence larger and greater than me or my people. I was shocked that I could even write a book. But both blacks and whites were shocked that I had the audacity to identify God and Jesus as black and involved in the black freedom struggle. That's racism in reverse, many whites said. And many blacks agreed with them. They began to ask, who is this Negro? Who calls himself a theologian? Where did he come from? And why is he so angry? They tried to ignore me, especially white theologians. But before whites knew what theological left hook had hit them, I gained a little confidence in my emerging perspective, and I burst forth with the right haymaker, a second volcanic theological eruption, a black theology of liberation in 1970, which was saturated with more rage than black theology and black power. The dominant color of this one is white. With the word liberation in red and a black cross replacing the letter T in liberation. The red symbolizes the blood of blacks. And the cross recalls the lynching tree on which blacks were put to death. And the color white symbolizes the people who did it. America that the gospel of Jesus is God's word of liberation to the black poor. Whites had turned Jesus' message into a gospel of white supremacy. A complete contradiction of what the gospel really is. Jesus, a poor Galilean peasant, executed as a criminal by the Roman state, had been transformed into an alabaster Christ who serves the interests of powerful rulers in America and in Europe. Now, the Spirituals and the Blues, in that book, this one, I began my theological journey in the black experience, building on the foundation that I had laid in black theology and black power and a black theology of liberation. The spirit in the Spirituals and the Blues, I'm wanting to wash my theology in the blood of black people, using slave spirituals and poor slavery blues as my focus. The colors, blue and black, that grace the cover of my third book, symbolizes the music and the people who sang it. I was nurtured in the Christian faith singing the spirituals at Macedonia AME Church and took my plunge into black secular faith listening to the blues blasting forth from the juke joints on Friday and Saturday nights. Talking about black blood crying out from the ground. Nothing tells us about the agony of that experience like the spirituals and the blues. What did I do to be so black and blue? A blues man sang. Nobody knows the trouble I seen. Nobody knows my sorrow. Nobody knows the trouble I seen. Glory, hallelujah. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long ways from home. Great God Almighty, folks feeling bad. Lost everything they ever had. Well, the blues ain't nothing but a poor working man feeling bad. Well, it's one of the worst old feeling that any old poor man's ever had. I had to reflect on the pain expressed in black music because it was created out of the shed blood from slavery to the present. It is only in this music, writes James Baldwin, that the Negro in America has been able to tell his story. But Baldwin says it is not a very pretty story. It is a story of pain and suffering. If I were going to write an authentic black liberation theology, I had to let the suffering of black people speak in and through my theology. My theology came out of the black experience of slavery, segregation, and lynching, and not from white American and European theologies that I studied in graduate school. Black liberation theology emerged out of the civil rights and black power movements, symbolized in the life and work of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. The black in black theology comes from Malcolm. And the theology comes from Martin. I was trying to hold them together. Because they had been separated in the 1960s. My first two books were intended to wake up white theologians and slap their faces, as it were, and to arouse them out of a deep theological and philosophical sleep as they were snoring loudly about Bard, Bootman, and Tillich. And a host of other European theologians. But with the spirituals and the blues, I turned to the most creative religious source for understanding the gospel of Jesus in American history. This is not an overstatement or hyperbole. If one wants to create an authentic American theology with a Christian identity, one must begin reflecting on the religious experiences of slaves, the crucified people in American history, because the religion of slave is the closest analogy to the religion of Jesus. Think about that. In the spirituals and the blues, I wanted to wake up black people, to arouse them out of a deep spiritual sleep, so they could begin to realize that the spirituals and the blues are like treasures hidden in the field, which someone found and hid. And then in her joy goes and sells all that she has to buy that field. I was so joyful about what I had found in the spirituals and the blues that I was beside myself. White theological blindness regarding the rich theological source in the black religious experience fueled my passion, which burst forth again in God of the Oppressed. It is a theological knockout punch intended to finish off white theology as a credible interpretation of the Christian gospel. In that book, I saw myself coming of age, feeling a little more confident after many intellectual battles and with white and black theologians asking me about the ground on which I stood. What then was the primary theological claim that I was seeking to advance in those early texts? And how did I discover it? I went first to the Bible and reread it in the light of the black experience, as I had learned it as a child at Macedonia AME Church in Bearden. I discovered that the God of the Bible is the liberator of the oppressed of the land. As evidence for that theological claim, I pointed to the exodus of Hebrew slaves out of Egypt, the prophet's message of God's justice for the poor and the weak, and God's solidarity with the poor as revealed in Jesus of Nazareth, the one who was crucified in Jerusalem. Black theology is biblical theology. I was never taught in seminary about God's liberation of the poor in a way that made it accessible as a theological construction. This insight came to me like a God-sent revelation. The point is so simple. for theology, especially since the insight was clearly expressed in the spirituals and the freedom songs of the civil rights movement. I was too preoccupied with reading white theologians who tricked black seminary students into believing that the truth revealed in the black experience was theologically worthless. If everything one reads in theology is written and taught by whites about their experience, it's easy to conclude that whites are smart, very intelligent, and blacks are dumb, ignorant. I spent 6 years in graduate school, and there was not one assigned theological text written by a black or about the black experience. It was therefore difficult for me to think black when everything about theology was white. I was faced with nearly 2,000 years of white theological thinking about Christianity. It was a daunting task for me to take on the white theological tradition with people like Anselm and Aquinas, Luther and Calvin. You heard of them? Yeah. Bob, Tillich, Niebuhr. How you gonna say black with them? Yeah. Yeah. What could I say about the Christian gospel that could challenge these theological giants? I was not sure. Yet, some Charlie Kahn rose up in me. That's my daddy. And urged me to accept the challenge of white theology and to soak my theology in blackness with liberation at the center. Yeah. Now that conviction opened my eyes to see Jesus as the liberator, as the most important theological affirmation of the gospel. For Jesus is God's Son who lived and taught and died for the liberation of the oppressed. Jesus' cross is God's paradox, God entering history as weak and powerless, taking the form of a slave, becoming obedient to death, even death on the cross. That's in Philippians 2, if y'all don't know. The cross prevents dominant people anywhere, any place, of any color, from accepting the gospel of Jesus. No one can put people on crosses like the lynching tree in America and still understand and embrace the true meaning of Jesus' cross. The Holy Spirit is God's spirit of liberation who empowers poor people not only to jump and shout, but also to fight for freedom when the odds are against them. The Holy Spirit is God's presence in the lives of poor people all over this world. I saw the Spirit of God at work in the civil rights and black power movements during the 1960s. empowering black people to demand their right to be free. It was an amazing sight to see African Americans marching and singing, "We shall overcome. We won't turn back. We don't feel no ways tired. We come too far from where we started from. Nobody told us it would be easy. We don't believe that God brought us this far to leave." The Black Freedom Struggle was both tragic and beautiful. Tragic and beautiful. The beauty was found in the resistance and in the joy of struggling for justice. And the tragedy was the suffering and the death, like the death of Emmett Till in the Tallahatchie River, which paradoxically ignited the civil rights movement, and like the killing of the four innocent girls in the Birmingham church. But despite the absurdity of that demonic act, made black people more determined to fight until freedom comes. There was and still is a fire burning in the black community and in me, and nobody can put it out. There was no way for Christian blacks to explain the source of their courage to face the continued brutality of white supremacy, except by pointing to God's liberating presence in their lives, empowering them to believe that they could indeed transform America into the nation that it ought to be. I had to write to redeem myself for being in a seminary classroom and a library reading European theologian while black people were out in the street risking their lives for my freedom. I had to pay my dues. As Baldwin said, the bill had come due. And after reading the Bible in the context of the black struggle for justice, I boldly asserted that white theology is not Christian theology, because it's a language of white supremacy. To understand Christian identity from a dominant white point of view is like trying to understand Jesus from a dominant Roman point of view. Pause and think about that now. America is like the Roman Empire. And even many biblical scholars say that. Like Rome, America is dominant and white. Jesus was a Palestinian Jew, and his community was an oppressed minority like black people in the United States. There is no way that Roman intellectuals and politicians could understand and embrace the meaning of Jesus of Nazareth. When Pilate summoned Jesus and asked, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this I was born. And for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Then Pilate asked him, "What is truth?" As a typical philosopher intellectual. See, yeah. Now he asked that question from a philosophical and a Roman point of view. Pilate of Jesus was talking about was standing before him. The same is true of white intellectuals and politicians in America. When I say Jesus is black and God is black, white theologians were outraged and thought I lost my theological mind. It was my way of saying that Jesus was a Jew. And God is identified with the oppressed. This is not a literal statement about skin color. It is not a statement about biology. It's a symbolic, poetic statement about God. Like saying Jesus is a rock in a weary land. A lily of the valley and the bright and morning star. The truth which is revealed in Christ must be apprehended with faith. And faith draws on poetic and imaginative capacities rather than rational ones. That was why Reinhold Niebuhr said people without imagination should not even talk about God. God and the imagination are one, writes the great poet Wallace Stevens. Theology talk about God is symbolic language, as the theologian Paul Tillich rightly emphasized. It is a language of imagination. And black preachers know something about imagination and proclamation. One needs spiritual knowledge to understand what it means to say Jesus is black, or God is black. God is always found where we don't expect, like in a manger in Bethlehem, or on a cross in Jerusalem, or hanging from a lynching tree in America. I began to write because I had no choice. Writing about black liberation theology was my way of seeing and living, my way of feeling and thinking, my way of responding to the black blood crying out in the wilderness in America. I write theology the way I feel it in my flesh and bones. And you can't imagine what it means to say what you've always wanted to say, and to say it precisely to the people you wanted to say it to.
All right, everybody. You have listened to a good 52 or 50 minutes of Dr. James Cone, the founder of Black Liberation Theology, as he delivered a speech in Union Seminary School, where he has taught for many, many years. And you will be hearing more from him on my radio program as long as I'm here. And so I'm going to take a quick break, allow you all to digest that. I'm going to do some station identification stuff that I'm supposed to do to make sure that we keep WEFT strong in our wonderful community. Underwritten, Higher Ground is underwritten by Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There is also a self-pay sliding scale. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's ELLIOTT CounselingGroup.com. Or you can give them a call at 217-398-9066. 217-398-9066. Again, Kevin Elliott Counseling, 217-398-9066. And I want to take this moment also to thank once again Sandra Otten for her interview with Brother Craig Walker yesterday morning on Progressive Radio, as she gave him the opportunity to outline some of the concerns that he's been raising through community alerts around the Bristol Park development. It was a very insightful and enlightening interview and conversation. Just another thing, one of the things that Kevin and Sandra do in the community. So thank you again, Sister Sandra. I want to say to all my brothers and sisters out there in the labor movement, all of our allies, as we are all stronger together, that we must maintain our solidarity. My union, SEIU Local 73 Chapter 119, is currently in bargaining and negotiations and contract negotiations with the University of Illinois. And although they consider us essential employees now because of our work that we do in cleaning the buildings and feeding the students and delivering the mail and shoveling the snow and washing windows and being at work when nobody else has to be at work, they consider us essential employees, and they have $100,000 bonus to give to the president and millions of dollars to give to the football coach and millions of dollars to build a new stadium. But for those of us who are essential employees, who are the janitors and who are the custodians and who are the food service workers and the front line of safety and security on campus and removing the snow and all those things I described, they tell us we have zero for you. Nothing. In fact, they went from offering us zero to offering us zero and said in our negotiations that that was movement, that that was significant movement in our negotiations, that offering us zero to then offering us zero was significant movement. Sometimes you get into these spaces and it's kind of like this conversation we're going to get into, where some people just kind of see you as less than, and then maybe they think you are not intelligent enough to know that zero plus zero equals zero. In fact, with the healthcare decision looming, many of us are going to be paying extra for healthcare. So what the university is actually proposing is pay cuts, as opposed to an increase that we all know that they have the money to pay. The university is not broke. The priorities for students and workers are broken at the university. That's what's broken. So we want to ask for your support out there in the community. You'll see us on the front lines. You may have seen some of my brothers and sisters out there yesterday on the corner of Oak and Kirby fighting for a fair contract. And we're going to keep fighting for a fair contract because we must protect labor in our community and across the state. So we want to hope that we do hope and we know that this community will stand behind us as we bargain for and fight for fair contracts at the University of Illinois. So the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to play a quick little snippet or play a song. And then we'll come back to the conversation with myself and Brother Bruce Brown. Can I call him Reverend Bruce or Minister Bruce? Y'all stay tuned. He said Bruce is just fine, huh? All right, yeah, I'm still dealing with technology down here as we work. If you want to give us a call, the phone number is 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. We are streaming online at weft.org, www.weft.org. So you can call somebody up. Weird stuff. And tell them, hey, listen, I am listening to Brother A-Dub and Brother Bruce right now. Tune in. Click on Listen Live. Check us out here.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rock, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter
cry. Oh, okay.
So I'm wondering now, I don't know if you're going to be able to go, you or your son, but I thought I'd bring these tickets down and you could announce them. You don't have to say where they come from.
All right. So we on. Okay, well, listen up, y'all. We are here live now, back on 90.1 FM on your listening dial. You are listening to Higher Ground with your brother, Aaron Ammons, a.k.a. Brother A-Dub. I got Brother Bruce in the house. And also Brother Ted Atkinson has joined us.
Yes, sir.
So I invited Bruce down as a guest to deal with the, and to have this conversation. We've been listening to Brother James Cone, Brother Ted, all morning here. And we're going to have a conversation around Black liberation theology, as well as connecting it to the film Birth of a Nation by Nate Parker. Of course, we know Nat Turner had a different perspective on how he eventually began to preach, and which led to one of the to the movie and led to the revolt led by Nat Turner. So, Bruce, first of all, why don't you take a minute and introduce yourself to the people?
Okay, my name is Bruce Brown. I'm the assistant pastor at Center of Hope Church. I'm a current grad student, just starting my MBA journey, and father, son, husband. That's about it.
All right. Excuse me. And so, Bruce, you did have an opportunity to listen to Dr. James Cone's presentation at Union Seminary. You've did a little bit of other readings on Black liberation theology, and you have seen the film.
Correct.
All right, so we're going to get into that. And Brother Ted has joined us for a moment here in the booth. So what you why don't you tell us who you are too, brother?
Yeah, this is Brother Ted Atkinson, a longtime member of the community. And I'm down here to the station this morning just to drop in on Aaron to maybe have a word or two. I'm not going to be here long. But I'm always glad to hear Aaron's program. So generally, if I'm not here in person, I'm calling him on the phone because he was just playing James Cone. James Cone's, I first heard him, he was brought to the University of Illinois by Dr. Mildred Griggs.
Oh, okay.
Right, And he brought his book called Martin and Malcolm.
Yes.
And it was a good book to read. And I thought that... he sounds like, when he communicates, like he's in the tradition of, puts me in the mind of Henry Clark, Ben Johansson. I don't know if you heard of him.
Dr. Ben.
Ali Missouri. And then, of course, some of the other, spiritual leaders, they talk a lot about this liberation theology. First place I'd heard it was under hearing it from Jeremiah Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of got a little of that. Then, of course, I've heard conversations by Dr. Cornel West, Dr. Eric Michael Dyson, Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of listen to them because they kind of give you the blues, you know, when they begin to speak about mm-hmm. activism in terms of what we should apply
yeah.
as we go forward, picking up a little of the history
yeah.
and using it in the present as we move forward.
And so Dr. Cohn also talked about, you know, he had several books. And mm-hmm. so he had Black Liberation Theology. You had Martin and Malcolm. You have God of the Oppressed. And what was one with the Spirituals and the Blues? I can't remember the name of that. Was it Spirituals and the Blues? I can't remember the name of that one. Now he has also The Cross and the Lynching Tree. So he does make some.
Yeah,
his most recent piece. Also, before we get deep into this, I do have two tickets for anybody who wants to go see the Fighting Illini today at Memorial Stadium. And they're playing, Minnesota? Yeah, they play Minnesota.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
if you want to go check the game out, looks like we got a couple of tickets to give away down here for anybody who wants mm-hmm. to go, because mm-hmm. I will not be able to go. Brother Ted, if you know somebody, or Bruce, or whoever it is who knows somebody who wants to grab a couple of tickets to go to the game today, we do have a couple of tickets for people who want to actually attend the game. We don't want to give them to anybody to go scalp. I want you to go to the game.
Yeah, they'll right? be selling.
All right. So y'all give me a call down here if you're interested, or stop by the radio station down here, WEFT, and we have those for you. So, Bruce, as a young and up-and-coming minister, you know, the salt and pepper beard is not going to – it doesn't disqualify you from being young.
Appreciate that.
Coming up as a young minister – going through what is described as a by Dr. Cohn, that some of the traditional theologians that are used in seminary and places like that are white theologians who didn't even see or value Black people as real human beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, what do you think? What do you think about that in particular? And then the follow up question would be, what role do you think the Black church plays in responding to the Black blood that is calling out from the ground today?
Okay, so if I could answer your first question, what I think about Dr. Cohn and his comments about white theologians not recognizing the error of America when dealing with when rationalizing slavery, at the same time preaching a fire and brimstone gospel. You know, early on, I'll say in my youth, so starting late middle school, early high school, that was like the first time that question kind of bothered me a little bit, because learning about my history, learning about the things, that our people went through, and hearing some of the sermons that were preached during that same time, I was like, wow, there seems to be a real disconnect here, because when you're talking about oppression, and when you're talking about, Jesus coming to save the lost and fighting for the poor and fighting for the destitute, it's in, stark contrast to what was going on in this nation. How can I put this? When it comes to Black liberation theology and my understanding of it, even though, I haven't done an extensive, research on it, but the things that I've looked into, the text that I've read, the such as you played earlier, the videos from Dr. Cohn and others who have voiced, their research and experience in it, what I connect with is that it is an embodiment of the text. Anytime you look at the Bible, or you look even at Jesus when he used parables to teach lessons, it is about sharing a story with the people who you're speaking with, where they can connect with the different parts of the story and can see themselves, and they embody the lesson that's to be taught. And that's what I see Black liberation theology as, because when you look at when you look at Egypt and you look at Israel and you look at the 400 some years of slavery, it's very easy for black people to connect with 400 years of slavery. It's very easy for us to connect with, because of our history, it's easy to connect with the images of God hearing the cries and hearing the prayers and hearing people cry out for freedom. And then he offered that freedom. And so this theology, which is as, you know, theology being the study of the nature of God and religious belief, it is very, it's hard for some people to take when really it is an embodiment. It is about people embracing the message that's in the text and seeing themselves in it and identifying the circumstances that they're faced against, and similar to the substitution property in algebra. You know, you have a factor, and you can, wherever X is, you can substitute whatever number you want to in X to solve the problem. So when it comes to embodying the text, if my oppressor is doing some of the same things that I see Egypt do to Israel, then it's okay for me to see, for me to label my oppressor and identifying my oppression and my mistreatment. And so it's not that we're demonizing a people, but it is, again, embodying the text and understanding what's being said, understanding, you know, what to take from it and how to move, so, what to expect.
So one of the things that that you made me think about in your response is, and my question really was trying to uncover and deal with your oppressor giving you your freedom at the same time. Or if I don't treat you right, you cannot count on me teaching you right. Right? Mm-hmm. So black liberation theology and what Dr. Cone was presenting was saying that, no, I want to see my theology through the lens of the suffering of my people, right?
Mm-hmm.
His question, he said, if God is in the world where people are suffering, then what then is God doing?
Right. Right.
Okay, right? You know, because you always find God, he said, in a manger, in places where you don't expect him, in a manger or on a cross, right? So there's this connection to God and to the suffering of poor people, as you describe, maybe of the destitute, right? So if you have individuals, whether they're teaching in your schools, whether they're teaching at seminary or wherever it is, if the education that you're being handed is being handed to you by those who are oppressing you and who are enslaving you, then what are they handing you? Mm-hmm. So that's what this black liberation theory, as I heard him talk about it, and the reason why he's pointing out Niebuhr and some of these other folks who didn't see black people as human beings, right? Then what are they teaching you? And the connection that we're making, that I'm trying to make here with with Nate Parker's film, Birth of a Nation, when you think about what Nat Turner was being taken to other plantations to teach at first, and then when he started to see wider and see the lens and see the suffering of the people, he began to see his theology through the lens of that suffering, and it brought about a different individual, right?
Right.
So, but right. Ted,
and I think that's an important part, because even though the slaves were in rebellion and they wanted to calm their rebellion, and the way that they thought would be a good idea, of course, was for him to then go there and preach. But by using the Bible in order to get those slaves to submit, that meant they were going directly scripture by scripture to a certain extent, the way that the host had written it or prepared it, mm-hmm. or at least use the scriptures to their advantage, which was to suppress and oppress. And then I could see Nat Turner using the religion, when he turned it around, he was using it for our liberation and salvation.
Mm-hmm.
Our black people, once we begin to get into that, kind of theology to a certain extent. We had to work within the host to stay alive. And what I mean by that, Aaron, is like if I'm working for a grocery store and they're telling me, I'm telling them that the food in there needs to be kind of cleaned up, let's say, three times a day. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and say, well, no, Ted, here we clean it once a day. And I'm just trying to get a better product out to the people. I'm just saying, well, you know, we ought to clean it three times a day. If I keep arguing that point, then that means that I'm going to either have to leave and come out, or I'm going to stay and just feel uncomfortable by doing what the host wants me to do. Mm-hmm. So it looks like Nat Turner is working with the host until he decides to break completely. And when he broke completely, it became really violent. A lot of us didn't want to get to that point, so what we did is that we took religion and we began to use it in terms of our songs. Steal away to Jesus. We're trying to get off this plantation. Go down, Moses, go down. Swing low, sweet chariot. Those are actually the songs that we create, which we have a disconnect today. That we don't even use them in the church. Generally, we're singing a lot of anthems and things that were given to us because as we begin to come out of poverty and, of course, begin to live above a bowl of beans, we kind of adopted the host's behavior, mm-hmm. and we begin to sing the things that made them comfortable. But that's our tradition, and that's what we connected with, and that's what we're rich with. So actually, we tried to use it in a way, not in a violent way, but still stay with it. And then we also use it for symbols as well as songs. We had certain codes, and we needed those things. So we're trying to work that way, too. But I think with the way that he felt like he was being used, he was saying, right. In order to come out of this, just seems like we're just going to have to do the thing that really we don't want to do, and it's going to cost you.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, I'm not going to, this is me, I can't speak for Brother Bruce or Brother Ted, mm-hmm. I'm not going to apologize for the violence, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to run from that, because by any means necessary, every human being deserves to be free, right? You know, you do not have the right to enslave me, right? And so I don't have to succumb to that. And if Nat Parker, that's a Freudian slip for you, right? Sees it from that way, then I'm not going to say that that's wrong. I'm not going to say that, mm-hmm. right? Because what's wrong is the way you treat me. That's what's wrong, mm-hmm. right? You know,
right.
So I'm not going to apologize for even the violent nature of it. And you did point out something, Ted, that I want to come back to now with this other, with the role of the black church, because you said at first, we said, okay, well, look, let me get these spirituals and these songs that send message that we're going to steal away. We trying to get out of here, and we're going to use our spirituality to do that, but we're going to steal away to now those songs don't exist anymore.
Right.
Now it's, you know, what's dominant for the most part is now that we're above a bowl of beans, mm-hmm. let's talk about capitalism. Right. That's a lot of the times what we're talking about. We're not hearing, you know, this connection that you described, Bruce, between what's happening in the streets to Tamir Rice. Right.
Right.
And what's happening to Eric Garner and Sandra Bland. We're not making those connections anymore. So back to that second question, what is the role of the black church today in responding to the black blood that's crying out from the ground?
Okay, so before I get into my answer, I just want to read two things. So Psalms 82 and 3, it says, defend the poor and fatherless, do justice to the afflicted and needy. Zechariah 7 and 10 says, and oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor, and let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. And so when you ask what is the role of the black church, I think it can be summed up in these two verses. When you're talking about the blood crying out from the ground, there's a Bible story about that, Cain and Abel. When Cain killed his brother, God asked Cain, where's your brother? What you talking about? Am I my brother's keeper? And it didn't go unpunished. And so when you're talking about us people, regardless of the amount of melanin that's in our skin, being made in the likeness and image of God, we're brothers and sisters. And so what we do to each other, we must account for. And so when you're talking about the blood that has been shed, you know, in America, the blood that's been shed through slavery, the blood that's been shed here recently against the poor, against the fatherless, against the afflicted, against the needy. Somebody's going to have to answer for that. And whether so the church's position, and I think there are many ministries here in town who get this and, you know, have programming and resources allocated, you know, for these groups. But it is our job to fight for those who cannot, who don't have the strength to fight. It is our job to be the voice of the voiceless. It is our job to step in areas where people without resources or without know-how, it's our job to step in those arenas and do what's necessary. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we are our brother's keeper. And there's no way, you know, I'll make this personal in a sense. So there's no way that me being assistant pastor, understanding the plight of my fellow brothers and sisters in my ministry, and knowing that one day that I'll be their leader, there's no way I'm comfortable knowing that I'm, you know, 3, 4, 5 rungs ahead of my membership and I'm not helping them climb those rungs themselves. You know, it is about progress. It is about empowerment. It is about, you know, seeing, I want to say, experiencing what the Bible says we can have. There's no reason for me to live on the backs of my members. There's no reason for that, because if you look at it, all the disciples had a vocation. Jesus even had a vocation. So even though there are scriptures and you know, there are scriptures that say that, you know, when you are the teacher, that those who you're teaching, it is good for them to communicate with you, and communication being money. I greeted that wholeheartedly, but I'm not going to establish my livelihood, the livelihood of my family, the livelihood of my children, the livelihood, you know, I'm not going to have that be relying upon the backs of the people, because I think that does a disservice to the people, especially when they are trying to make progress themselves. I believe it's my job to assist them in that progress.
So I want to, I know it's easy for us, and I threw out the word capitalism and stuff, and I know it's easy for us to transition to that, but I want to bring us back to Birth of a Nation and to Nate Parker and Nat Turner and Dr. Cone, Black Liberation Theology. Now, I'm not saying, I certainly did not hear from Dr. Cone or Jeremiah Wright or anybody else that, that they were teaching a message for Black people to go out and kill a bunch of people. That's not the message that I get from Black Liberation Theology.
Not at all.
However, what I do get is that there is a challenge, as we issued to the Black church by Dr. Cone and to white theologians, that there has to be a critique of where we are now. So if this is our saving grace, and it's supposed to be addressing our spirit and stuff like that, you said somebody has to answer for that. So when Cain and Abel, so this, the story that you were sharing, right, there was a actual consequence given to Cain, right?
Yeah.
And as Dr. Cone said, today's analogy is easy to say that Cain is white folks, right? And Abel was Black folks, right? because we're not looking at individuals. You mm-hmm. are looking at a historical, Ted, mm-hmm. analysis yes. and critique of the treatment of this people here in America. So you're talking about enslavement, Jim Crow, mass incarceration, and mass murder that is taking place here. And that blood is on the hands of predominantly white America, right? And also on these institutions that have been set up on the backs of poor people, right? And so this critique says that as you said, somebody has to pay who and when. See, we get into this a lot that, you know, and I think this is the sort of pie in the sky, we'll get heaven later type of thing that young people like myself have a problem with, or younger. Right. No. See, when I mess up at home, I get a whooping. Okay, right? You know what I'm saying? When I mess up out here in the streets, I go to jail. Don't tell me that my oppressor, God, gonna get them later. No, see, no, no, no. That is not how life worked for me, for real. Right? You know what I mean? So there's gonna be some relief here today, not tomorrow, not after I die, and God all work it out. No, because see, the question is, if God is in the world where people are suffering, then what is God doing? Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So we want to talk about how this Black liberation theology, how this film says, what is the appropriate response for Black America, the Black church, even white America and white theologians? What is the appropriate response to the Black blood that is crying out on the streets of Champaign, on the streets of Ohio, the streets of New York today? What is an appropriate response to that?
I would say, Aaron, it's number one, it's being active. Most of our problem solving has come from the Black church. I mean, right after during Reconstruction, right after the Civil War, Blacks then, when they had church and they had Sunday schools, when they had, they were always teaching. And that, to me, if people want to be Christ-like, I would say first try to be a teacher, because I don't know where he went to preach. He looked like to me he was doing a lot of teaching. And I am thinking that people who want to wear the cloak and the collar, mm-hmm. and they want to be in those positions of leadership, not in leadership positions where you're always following what the person at the top is telling you or showing you what to do, I think you will be much more of an asset to the person at the top if you got different views and different ideas, because mm-hmm. he needs that staff to help kind of guide him to a certain extent. I think we have a lot of spiritual leaders in the world do not have the educational background where they've been involved in their community in terms of all the things that are going on. And I'm talking about mainly politics. Now, politics affect us whether we're involved in it or not.
True.
The coming in this door, politics have decided, votes were taken as to, is that going to be 6 foot or going to be 8 foot? So it's going to affect us one way or the other. It's being passed by a council. It's coming in a statute, an ordinance, or whatever. It's going to affect us in some way. Now, we've got to take that information and kind of bring it down to the parishioner to get them to understand the importance of knowing this information, because you speak about empowerment, mm-hmm. Dr. Brown. And that means it's really what we need. And a lot of the folks, particularly our lay preachers, they don't have the technical background. They need some of that too, because if you're reaching out to the young folks who have all this energy and it seems like they're causing all this little disruption, the way that you get to them, you're going to have to understand at least where they are. And sometimes it's better for letting these young folks come in and teach some of the old folks.
Yeah.
The different platforms that we're using in terms of how do you communicate when you're getting to understand something. He's got a cell phone. Well, you don't. you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you can give me something you don't have. And I realize it's a struggle now, because we never had the resources in the past. We never had the education in the past. Only some of us were able, to manage our way. And so as a result of that, we have been able to do great things with what we've already had to work with based on what our limitations.
Right.
After we come out of slavery. So we built the historical Black colleges.
Let me let the caller get in and ask you guys a question.
Okay.
You might open that door up so you guys can hear it. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Brother Live Action. How you brothers doing?
Brother Live Action. How you feeling, brother?
I'm doing all right. I apologize. I just woke up. Been listening. Oh, for about 5 minutes and already inspired to call.
And this is an inspired call, right? Because if you only been listening for 5 minutes, I'm a little hesitant about this one. But go ahead, brother.
No, sir. You guys are hitting it right on the head in regards to the church and their stance. I've been at a couple of workshops, specifically listening to T.O. Hardeman from the Interrupters come down this past Thursday. And he said something that has been obvious. Our churches are too intertwined into the politics, exactly what you guys are saying. And that's guiding the conversation, that's guiding the stance, because historically, especially with the AME churches, they have been in the forefront in regards to civil rights movement. They've taken a stance in our communities with different issues. Pastors have been like the face of a lot of the movements. However, through time, you know, whether it be money, whether it be some type of positioning, so to speak, it has been watered down, that motivation. When you talk about who's to pay, you guys are right on it. We have to focus our energy on us. Aaron, you speak a lot about simple things like gardening. We have to focus on survival, the basics with survival, and putting our energies there as part of motivating our people, because we spent years trying to get someone to stand up and say, yeah, hey, it's our fault, we're going to pay. But it's not happening. It's not going to happen as the years come by and there's a further disconnection even from ourselves with our ancestors. You got to look at the ancestors of those that have been doing the oppressing. And we do have some white allies and some people of other cultures that are allies. But again, it's like speaking to the choir when you have these protests, you have these movements happening now, because you're not getting the faces in the room that you need. You're not getting those that need to be a part of that dialogue at the table. And so I just want to again say you guys are hitting it right on the head. I'm going to continue listening
All right.
and take this feedback from you guys, but I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. So, you know, one of the things that that I want to make sure we, because it's easy, and this happens all the time, and I even feel rushed as a host, and been doing this for over 10 years. You think you got to try to get everything in your one show, right? You know, and it's because you got so much fire in you. I want to bring us back to the context of this. We have played almost an hour of Dr. James Cone, the founder of Black Liberation Theology. So my intent is to first and foremost get the listeners to familiarize yourself with Black Liberation Theology, not through the students of it necessarily yet. The teacher is still alive, right?
Right.
Still teaching, lots of information out there, 5 books or so, hundreds of articles. Oh, no, he said 12 books.
Yeah, 12 books.
Right? 150 different articles. Dr. James Cone. Okay, God of the Oppressed, Black Liberation, Spirituals and the Blues, Cross and the Lynching Tree, which is the latest book, right? But go back to that beginning of his beginning of Black Liberation Theology when he first started. Familiarize yourself with that. What does that mean? Why did he do that? And then you should know, especially for those of us who are in the Black community, but it is for all people. Jeremiah Wright, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, was one of his top students, for sure. And who sat in the pews of Jeremiah Wright's church other than your president, Barack Obama, and First Lady Michelle Obama? Now, as much as Black folks are in love with them, you ought to understand that you don't just get the person as they are today. There's a context to all of us, an experience to all of us. So go back, study some and listen to some of this Black liberation theology. Get to the point of what we're trying to make here of what does it produce? What can it produce for our community? So there's a question that came in for the both of you. And I think it's a perfect question for both of you, because the cross and the lynching tree. The question is the cross and the lynching tree. What is each of your response to Dr. Cone's analogy of the cross and the lynching tree? Now, of course, you have the historical Ted Atkinson here in the building, and you have a up-and-coming salt and pepper preacher over here, Bruce Brown, for the cross and the lynching tree. Your response, gentlemen, of Dr. Cone's analogy of the cross and the lynching tree.
Well, I'm looking at that a lot of times, Aaron. the lynching tree to me, just let me put that in perspective in terms of the way that I see what it is. I always saw the lynching tree, which I paid a lot of attention to by, what's the singer's name? Bird, I can't think of her name right now. But she's the one who would sing it because it became historical when our blues singers and jazz singers had what they call a chitlin circuit. Mm-hmm. And the chitlin circuit went from Chicago to Memphis to Mobile all the way down to New Orleans. And as they traveled, she would sing this song, which had to do with black men being lynched all on the road down the way that they traveled. Mm-hmm. And I just saw it, to me, as death row. Mm. That's what it symbolizes to me. The other thing I think, with your other question about the cross, mm-hmm. I see that the cross is really what holds us in bondage to a certain extent. Now, a lot of ministers are not going to agree with me uh-huh. there. Because I think it holds us to bondage unless we begin to use it for our liberation. And that means you have to understand what it has done, because what it has done, religion, for the most part, it has taught us, number one, to be forgiven, sort of being a pacifist, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. But the way I looked at Jesus Christ, particularly in history, I look at as a person who was an activist. I saw him as a person who was, he wasn't violent, but I saw him as a radical. And when I say radical, I know these terms are going to mean different things coming mm-hmm. from different parts of the country. Radical means you get to the root part, get to the root of the problem. Mm-hmm. And so I saw him an activist, you know, in that way. And I also saw him having a little attitude, you know, to a certain extent, when things weren't going or people weren't doing what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I felt that him being a radical in a certain way was that it was disciplined with the Holy Spirit and the Word of God. That just seems like how he operated. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at a part in history where you saw Barabbas and you have Jesus, when they were both, he was an activist in his community, but he was doing it in a violent way. And I'm just trying to use this analogy mm-hmm. of two people saying this. We can try to accomplish this thing, but you're doing it one way where it might cause life. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do it this way where it, you know, it can kind of keep life. And when Pontius Pilate brought him out to be crucified, he says, well, I got two notable prisoners here. Which one do you want? And of course, those people in the Jewish community, which were the hierarchy of the Jewish community, said that we'll take Barabbas. And the reason why they wanted to take Barabbas is because Barabbas was saying, when these Romans come by your home, what you do is that you kick them out. You don't let them stay. You go and firebomb their institutions. That's the kind of guy he was, and that's the kind of guy that they wanted. And then here comes Jesus Christ was saying, don't do that. When the Roman comes by your home, he wants to stay, let him stay and give him a meal. All right? And then if he asks you to carry his pack, 4 mile, carry it 2 miles. So you can see the difference. But
I don't know if I'm getting that. From the connection between the cross
uh-huh.
and the lynch. So Dr. Cohn is saying through Black Liberation Theology that the cross and the lynching tree is one and the same.
Is that what he's saying?
That is his analogy of it. That's how he breaks it down. That you cannot see Jesus. If you only see his breakdown is if you only see Jesus through the cross and don't make that connection to the lynching tree, then you don't really understand Jesus, right? Because the lynching tree is the cross of today, right? You see what I'm saying? That's his analogy of it. So go ahead.
Okay, but you're talking about two ways to address it.
You saying address it. I'm saying the discussion on the analogy itself. Mm-hmm. How do we How do you receive that analogy? Do you accept that analogy and see it? You know,
I do, but I think the resolution, you're going to end up with two resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to end up with one where you're talking about Malcolm. You're going to end up with one talking about Martin.
But
mm-hmm. Malcolm's going to say by any means necessary. This is the way we're going to roll. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King is saying nonviolent, and you know the way that he went. And mm-hmm. so you got people really in both camps.
You say both.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's interesting the way he went, because they both got murdered, right?
Right, they did. Right. So no, but now, but we're talking about the host.
I got you.
We're talking about the system.
Okay. I got you. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Bruce.
I mean, I would say the correlation between the two is that the crucifixion was an act of shaming the individual being crucified. And so when you're talking about Jesus on the cross, I know it has kind of morphed into a different symbol, you know, a symbol for different meaning nowadays. But originally, the cross was a shaming of that individual. And so I see how he makes the correlation between the cross and the lynching tree, because it was a shaming of our people. It was a means of deterrent to those who thought they might want to run off. It was a constant, a ever present message that you can be right here, mm-hmm. whether you do something or not. Just understand and know that your life is in our hands, mm-hmm. and you can die at our will. So it's in your best interest to do what we expect you to do.
So when you, this is why I really want everybody to look deeper into this and really give and the scholarly and the historical commitment that Dr. Cohen, this is his life's work, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
We're talking mm-hmm. 2016, almost 2017. He was working on this in the early 70s.
Right.
So for 40 years, he's been working on this and perfecting this and trying to draw out his whole thing is that we don't want to. And Nate Parker talked about this in his Breakfast Club interview. The film is out there now, right?
Yeah.
Not the other Birth of a Nation that they showed in the White House that depicted us as animals and savages and all that kind of stuff. But the film is out there now, especially in this time where you see things like that are taking place in Dallas or Ferguson or whatever. Mm-hmm. And folks are like, look, I'm not having that no more. Now, I'd like to walk this walk that you talk about being nonviolent, right? I mean, that's a two-way street, though,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not, I believe the tides are shifting, right? And what he's saying in the film, In Birth of a Nation, is even through a spiritual walk and a religious walk, that God is also, he said, a God of wrath, right? Mm-hmm. So there is a consequence for this behavior that you bring in forth here, right? And if I am made in the image and likeness of God, I am the vicegerent. Basically here, then I have, just like I'm a steward of the earth, that I'm supposed mm-hmm. to fill and subdue it, multiply and fill and subdue the earth, right? Then there's some responsibilities that I have as it relates to your behavior. No, you mm-hmm. don't think that you're just going to be able to work outside the law and the ordinances of the heavens and the earth and mistreat people, kill people, and murder people in the
Absolutely.
Streets, and that we just going to wait for you to get some judgment later. You're going to get both judgments. You're going to get it here and later, right? You know, mm-hmm. that is the attitude today, I believe, that's taking place. And there's a, you all talked about this disconnect, right? Because,
right.
yeah, we see mm-hmm. some people in the church, but a lot of people see the church withering and dying on the vine,
yeah.
right? Because the message has become very much a prosperity message. Or that whatever it is that you're going through, just pray about it. It's going to be fine. And as the text says, somebody just says, why does the church still teach that life on earth was insignificant? Because obedient servants of God could expect a reward in heaven after death, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my reward is that I have to go through this suffering. So see, this is where Ted, you talked about, and this was a difference in the AME church and some of the churches when you just had to be called. My understanding is that through the AME church, see, you had to go through some graduate work,
right?
Yeah. You had an understanding of history and stuff. You couldn't just give your own personal experience where you've gone and watched other people and just mimicking other people. No, you have to have something that you can feed people so that you can build institutions.
Yeah,
so
you went through an institution.
Right,
you were,
now you cannot.
You were educated.
Right. Mm-hmm. Today, we're talking about, you're telling me that I have to, people are being asked to think. You're telling me that I was born, that the omnipotent great God created me through immaculate conception, basically, because I see them all as immaculate. It's a beautiful thing, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The way it works. Mm-hmm. But I am chosen to come into this world to suffer so that I can go to heaven. But the other people around me are swimming in Lake Michigan, living on top and high rises and taking private jets and stuff like that. And they both got the same God. You know, you're going to lose me with that, right?
Right. Okay. You know, and what I'm saying? And if I could speak to that with... You it was something that you had asked earlier, and I think this ties in perfectly. The role of the church is activism. When you look at Nate Parker and when you look at, Nat Turner, it was about activism. The means and the methods was murder, but it was still activism. It was something he saw. He saw the condition of the people and knew something needed to be done. And for us today in the Black church, it is about looking at the things that are needed and acting around those things. So whether it's politics, whether it is, collective empowerment, whatever it is, we need to be looking at the solutions to the issues that we're facing right now. Mm-hmm. And I do not agree with the suffer now and, you know, heaven later. That's not what the scripture tells me. Mm-hmm. I don't see that anywhere. I don't teach that. Mm-hmm. When I get the opportunity to preach, there are things that God has promised to his people on earth in this life and the next. So mm-hmm. we have a hope in both places. But what I've experienced is when you have an individual who doesn't know how to make the progress themselves, they can't lead anyone else that way. And so then the backdrop is, well, if you're suffering, just know that it's going to end and that, you know, just make it through now. And when you get to heaven, no. That's not the gospel that I read. That's not the gospel that I see. What I see is, what can I do right now? What can I put my hands to do? If God is a God of prophecy, if God is one of progress, then my devotion and my commitment to him should be opening up opportunities for me. And I say this personally because for many know that I was a teacher, and part of the primary, influence of me switching careers was because I was committed to God and I was in prayer. And he said, I've given you the opportunity to do this, but now I have another mission for you. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to stick with what's familiar? Or are you going to go with what I have for you? And I'm telling you, that was a faith move. That was a hard decision to make. It took months for me to make it. But I'm telling you right now that had I not took God at his word, that the opportunities that I have now, even me being on this program right now, it's a direct result of me taking those steps. So to bring it all back,
I'm going to let you have a parting shot before we get out of here. We only got about 5 minutes left. I wanted Ted to respond.
Well, there's two things, because I want to stay in connection with what you said, is because Christ did say, I come not only to have life, but have life more abundantly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that we should be operating in that. But it also
through
means,
that lens. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But it also means.
Hold on, caller.
In terms of our activism. Is that it means that our leaders, and we have to make sure that the person becomes the leader, because capitalism is this host that I keep talking about, mm-hmm. is going to try to have you do what they want you to do.
That's right.
And you're going to have to operate outside of that box in order to fulfill the prophecy of what it is when we're taking this Bible and spending much time with it. Now, if you look at the autopsies of some of the churches, what caused the death is because they then began to internalize and stay inside in terms of if we all belong to one church, is how much is I need to be doing for Aaron or Brother Brown here, rather than looking to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because that's where we're supposed to be going. Because within our souls, we're the church. But that institution is there, can be used, because it's the only buildings that we have in a black community that's stable, to where everybody can come.
And we
right.
can get
and we can get there, fair. Right.
We've got a caller here. Go ahead, caller. You guys might want
to. Hi, good morning.
Is it out here?
I was okay. with the preacher that said that God, the suffering is not, that's not what God sent Jesus for. God sent Jesus that we would have life and have it more abundantly. And I think that we increase our abundance by how we live and what we give back to the creation.
All right. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And how we live, Aaron, make sure you make a point to her, well, too, with being active.
And being active, again, yeah. that does tie back to what we were discussing here. All through, it is a clear understanding that in the Black Liberation Theology, it is designed to make you active, right? Because you, as Nat Turner saw, when he began, when he was just going out to preach that slaves should obey their master, he was just, you know, he was being used as a tool, right? But when he started to look at the and see Christianity through a different lens, and see through the lens of the suffering that he saw when he went from plantation to plantation, he became a new creature, and it activated him, right? Okay, so that is what. That is the intention of the film, Birth mm-hmm. of a Nation. It is designed to say, hey, get active, right? Be involved, right? And it's not designed to necessarily promote violence,
no.
right?
right?
But it might. The brother said, look, I'm putting the film out. Each one of you have to process this in the way that you do. I'm not trying to incite that, right? Mm-hmm. But you also have to put the responsibility on the person who keeps walking up to you, smacking you, shooting you, beating you, lynching you, right? You cannot keep that onus on me that I'm supposed to remain nonviolent while you continue to oppress me, repress me, brutalize me, right?
Absolutely.
If we're going to talk nonviolence, then we're going to talk nonviolence from both perspectives.
Correct.
Right. There's mm-hmm. a challenge Correct. That's being put forth. So there is an activism that is indeed being put forth through Black Liberation Theology, mm-hmm. through the film, that it is designed to say, look, you need to get involved and to okay. see through the lens of your suffering how to connect to your spirituality.
Because the violence that I see and that I would be talking about is, number one, stand up. Stand for something. And when you go back and look at what your ancestors had to go through, they did it for you. I think we ought to be doing it for our children and our grandchildren and some of our elderly
Dr.
people.
He said that. I want to read this. Yeah. He said one of his mentors or somebody that he was reading said, the one thing that they dread is not being worthy of my suffering. And he said, I like to say, the one thing I dread is not to be worthy of the life that the suffering of my black ancestors have made possible for me.
Right.
So, fellas, right. we got 2 minutes left. Okay, well, let me take this call. Folks, it's heating up now. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning to you all.
Good morning. Good morning.
This is Sister Carol calling. Just
is that
thank
right?
You.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be down here, but you want to call. But anyway, go ahead.
I just wanted to thank you all for having a conversation this morning, and I know you're closing out. I just wanted to suggest, obviously, that people study what you put forward this morning in Dr. Cone's work, but also that we begin to think, I think what one of the detriments we've had is the individualistic teaching of Jesus as opposed to the collective teaching of Jesus to solve the collective problems of black people. We have not been able to make the connection strong enough from our individual, I got a great car, to our collective 60% unemployment for African-American youth in this community. I ain't talking about somewhere else. So we have to be able to make that connection and don't think in terms of my individual salvation only, but the collective salvation of the people.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. We have 40 seconds. I'm going to let Bruce go and then Brother Ted let you go.
Real quick. I think one of our advantages, though, is the suffering that our people have gone through. That is a source of strength. That is a source of passion. And I think it is sometimes lost in understanding that it is suffering, it is resistance that makes us stronger. And for those who have suffered the most,